What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. We got the entire crew back together for the first time in a long time. We got quite a bit to talk about. The Grizzlies make a trade. But this was prior to draft night, right? Yeah, it was. It's all running together. So prior to draft night, the Memphis Grizzlies trade Tyus Jones, the 25th overall pick, and the Golden State Warriors 2024 first-round pick. And in return, they land Marcus Smart. Before we really dive into all of this and what Marcus Smart is going to look like on the roster, I want to ask you guys a question. In a vacuum, if I had told you that Dylan Brooks walks in free agency and the Grizzlies make a trade that and it lands them somebody that's a better defender and makes better decisions than Dylan Brooks, would you be happy with that trade?
Yeah, I definitely would, for sure. Especially if you said he was a, you know, like a good, like a defensive guy. Absolutely. That'd be my immediate response.
Man, for me, that's a kind of double-sided question. Because if you had told me in a vacuum, if you just say that, I would have said absolutely. But I also wouldn't have expected that guy to be 6'3", 6'4", that you were talking about that was going to fill that void. So we're going to talk about Marcus Smart. And like I said, there's two sides of that coin for me. But to answer that question, in a vacuum, I would have said yes. But I would have expected a little bit something different as far as the archetype of the player.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. I know when we're doing draft coverage, always that's one thing I always give you crap about. I'm like, if the dude's under 6'6", Isaac doesn't want to draft him. So I always say that he's hating on short people, which 6'3" is not by any, like by NBA standards, it's small, but by no other standards in the world is 6'3" small.
Hey man, I'm 6'4", so yeah. I take that. So I guess that might have something to do with it. No, I'm just playing.
But like, so defensive matchup wise, Smart is going to be a better defender for ones, twos, and he's still going to be a damn good defender on three, a damn good defender on threes. But bigger guys is not something like, you know, Brooks. We saw Dylan Brooks guarding Karl Anthony Towns. That's not something that you're going to see Marcus Smart doing. Even though with his wingspan, you're not losing any length. You lose 4 inches in height, but Marcus Smart's wingspan is bigger. So you don't really lose any length there necessarily. But I just think physically guarding fours and fives, some fours he's going to be okay on, some like it's not going to happen for the fives. I like what he brings to the table, because some of the guys that Dylan Brooks had the most trouble with were smaller, quicker guards. And that's going to be like, Smart is not going to have any issues there. And the Grizzlies, I feel like they have defenders that are good enough on the bigs that they're okay if their primary defender is better on ones and twos than threes and fours. Because you look at the job, David Roddy, although he wasn't exactly tearing up the world in the playoffs, he done a decent job for a rookie in the playoffs guarding LeBron James. You have Xavier Tillman that done an excellent job in the playoffs guarding bigs. You have one of the best help defenders in the league in Jaren Jackson. You could arguably say the best help defender in Jaren Jackson that's going to help you with bigs as well. So I like this move. I like it quite a bit. And I think that a lot of the things that we had issues with, like I say we as in the fan base had issues with Dylan Brooks, was his decision-making. You know, he was not able to knock down shots, yet he's still out here chucking up 17 shots a game. And Marcus Smart, if you look at his numbers, 2023, he was 12 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. He was not necessarily any more efficient than Dylan Brooks, but he also took far fewer shots. And when the defense collapsed on him, he's looking to get his teammates involved. And that's not something that we ever saw from Dylan Brooks. We saw flashes of that, but it was never, he was never comfortable enough to do it in a pressure situation.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I sort of echo that sentiment that I do think it'll be an issue, the size at times. But I don't think it'll be a blatant issue. I really worry about it more in the playoffs. I think in a regular season, that won't matter too much, because it's not like Dylan was just regularly guarding centers and power forwards. I mean, from time to time, yeah, but that really wasn't the case with him too. I think it'll kind of translate. And in fact, I just decided to look up some stats, and it looks like that they have had Marcus Smart do some of that. And so he did pretty good on John Collins. They had him guarding Clint Capella, had him guarding Joel Embiid sometimes in the playoffs. So it looks like they used him on bigs from time to time too. Probably about the same amount of time as maybe we would have for Dylan. Like, not, obviously not a primary matchup, but just sometimes on switches or whatever. And it seems like overall, he didn't get killed, held his own. Like 50%, he like Embiid had 50%, of course. Like I said, John Collins, he held him to like 25% or so. I think overall, I think the wingspan will help. And I do like the upside of, while Dylan is a very good defender, especially on ball defender, Marcus Smart would be better in terms of like the plays, right? Making those game changing plays, kind of like we lost with Melton, right? Some of those steals, that type of thing. Being able to get a little bit of that element back is exciting for me as well.
Man, and I was going to say, I want to be careful with how I say this, because people take things wrong. Like I said, oh, you poo-pooed the Marcus Smart trade, and that's not it at all, because I am a huge fan of Marcus Smart. I've been a fan of his going all the way back to Oklahoma State. I remember how he dominated Memphis in some of those games where when they played against Oklahoma State. They played him for a couple years in a row there. I think they had a home and home with them, and then they also end up playing them 2 years in a row, two times in 1 year, because they played them in a tournament, and then they had already scheduled them on a regular season schedule. So I've been a big fan of him for years. I mean, I love what he brings to the table. Super high IQ, hard-nosed, rugged, a vet, defensive player of the year. You bring that, now you have a defensive player, former defensive player of the year in your backcourt and in your front court with Jaren Jackson Jr. Obviously, I love the playmaking ability. I mean, you look at his stats, 6.3 assists per game. That's not something that you would have gotten from Dylan Brooks at all. That's one thing, where Dylan Brooks did not do much playmaking. It was pretty much his offense and what he did on the defensive end. He wasn't going to get much playmaking out of him. Marcus Smart definitely brings that to the table. And when you get Ja back, that's two guys there that you can make plays with. You can move them on and off the ball. Just a lot of different things that you can do with staggering lineups. So I love the addition. If you ask me in a vacuum, do I want Marcus Smart on this basketball team? The answer would have been an absolute yes. But I do have some concerns. I mean, you look across your starters, which I think even when Ja comes back, I think they're going to go Ja, Marcus Smart, Bane. And I think Bane will be penciled in as a small forward. I think Marcus Smart will guard the bigger guy, whoever that small forward is. If it's a guy that is really good offensively, I think you'll have Marcus Smart on that, even though he'll be listed technically as your two guard.
Right.
But I think 6'3", 6'3", 6'5", and Candace kind of said this as well, there are going to be times in a regular season where I think it's going to be fine. I think it's even going to be elite at times in a regular season. But I do have some concerns on when you get into playoffs, especially when you get deep into the playoffs, because sometimes what if you're going up against a team that has a really good guard and a big side, big wing at small forward? I mean, he can't guard both of those guys. And I think it kind of spreads you thin, because you also look at the fact that you traded your backup point guard in Tyus. And now Marcus Smart is basically, you're basically replacing or trying to replace that with a guy that's going to be starting. So now that spreads you thin as far as backup point guard. I know Luka Dončić can handle the ball, Desmond Bane can handle the basketball. And I think that's what we'll see. And that works, but is it ideal? Is it ideal that you're in a situation where you don't have a true ball handler coming off the bench? I don't know if that's best. It'll work, like I said, and you could be in that position, but I feel like that puts you in a situation that's not necessarily ideal. So I think there are shortcomings to the move, where it kind of spreads you thin across the roster with different concessions that you have to make for being like that. And then, like, you can look at the Denver and Miami series, where they switched Aaron Gordon on to Jimmy Butler. Like, teams are going to do stuff like that in the playoffs when you get there. And that's what worries me. I don't know if you can win a championship being that small. And that's the question that I have with it. I love Marcus Smart. I love everything he brings. I think he's going to be fantastic for this team. I just think there are going to be certain times and certain matchups, especially when you get into the playoffs, where you could run into some issues. If he gets in foul trouble, God forbid he gets hurt, you're going to be really in a situation to where you're really thin there. And I know they only had, I guess, one really defender with Dylan Brooks, but even though he has that 6'9 wingspan, I still think it does matter that you're 6'7 because you're just a bigger body in front of somebody. Like when you contest the jump shots, I know his arms are longer, but I still think that 3-4 inches matters. A lot of people like it doesn't matter at all if you have a longer wingspan. I still think it matters a little bit. So they're going to be small. It just feels like this franchise is always having to win in unorthodox ways. And that is something that I wish we'd get away from. Back in G&G, they couldn't make shots, so they had to try to slow the game down, muck it up, play defense, and win that way. In this new grit and grind era, they couldn't make shots, so they had to try to beat you with offensive rebounds and second-chance points and stuff like that. Now they're going to be smaller than everybody else. I just wish they could get normal at some point. And that's kind of my only argument with it. Like, it has nothing to do with Marcus Smart, because I think he's going to be fantastic. It's just being that small all the time, that just kind of worries me a little bit.
So,
yeah,
even with that size, you mentioned that, like, Dylan Brooks being 6'7". Dylan Brooks at 6'7", averaged 3.3 rebounds last year in the regular season and 3.1 in the playoffs. And you look at Marcus Smart, what he done in the regular season at 3.1. So the rebounding, you're not going to expect, like, Dylan Brooks was not expected to be a rebounder. They're not going to expect Marcus Smart to get, you know, like, there's going to be times when he gets rebounds, but you expect your bigs, Jaren, Steven Adams, X, whoever your 4 or 5 is on the squad, that's who you expect to grab your rebounds. My thing, you know, you question whether they can win a championship because of the size, but go back to the Golden State Cleveland series. And I know one thing that you're going to tell me is Cleveland had LeBron James and the Grizzlies do not have LeBron James, but the Grizzlies, I understand that, but you look at who was guarding Kevin Durant in that series? Who was his primary defender? Do you remember?
And when the
Warriors blew the 3-1 lead and the Cavs ended up winning the championship, who was Kevin Durant's primary defender?
God, who was on that team?
It was Matthew Dellavedova. Matthew Dellavedova is 6'3". And so, like, I get where you're coming from. And to a certain extent, I agree with what you're saying. But I think 6'3" plays different, right? Like, some guys play bigger than their height. People talk about Kenneth Lofton Jr. and how he's not going to be able to rebound because he's undersized. Let's talk about Dennis Rodman, arguably the best rebounder to ever play the game. Or how about Ben Wallace? Both of those guys were undersized. Charles Barkley, 6'6", incredible rebounder. Different guys play different. PJ Tucker's only 6'6", and he's guarding 4s and 5s all the time. It's all about what you do. Like, just, you're not pigeonholed because you're this height. It's all about how you play the game. And so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that's not a legitimate concern, because I there's definitely some validity to it. But to me, what they done was go out and upgrade Dylan Brooks. And Candace mentioned earlier about, you know, the hustle plays that we lost whenever they got rid of Melton. So now you've got that wing defender, a better wing defender, for, you know, Marcus Smart being a better wing defender than Dylan Brooks, and you get the hustle plays that you were getting from D'Anthony Melton. And yeah, you still want to have two players instead of, I like having it from one guy rather than having it from two, because you're not always going to be able to play those guys together.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, teams have to have guys that are not the stars step up in order to win a championship. So whether we like it or like, this team is never going to be just loaded up to where they're going to steamroll to a championship. We're going to have to get production from somebody that we don't necessarily expect it from. That you're going to have to see it from Zaire. You were hoping he would take a leap second year, and you had this huge regression. And it's like, okay, did they waste that pick? Are they going to give up on him? Are they going to move him? I don't know. He has the size and the physical tools to be that kind of impact player. David Roddy played very well in his first year. What's he going to look like year two? Does he move into a full-time rotation player that makes Z expendable? You know, like there are so many. You look at the Nuggets roster, right? You have Jokic and Jamal Murray. Aaron Gordon played well. You had a game where Michael Porter Jr. played well. It wasn't in the finals, but and like throughout the series, they had guys that stepped up and played their role and played it to perfection. Bruce Brown is not by any stretch of the imagination an all-star player, but he was very impactful on that team. And that's what, like, I don't know that the Grizzlies ever get a roster that looks like what the Nuggets roster looked like this year, but they have the core. And I believe in Ja, Jaren, and Dez. I believe that core is good enough to win a championship. You just have to put the right pieces around it. And I think Marcus Smart is one of those pieces. Like, he is a guy that understands. He's played, like, if you want to call it third fiddle to Tatum and Brown. Like, he adapted to his role in Boston, so you know that he's capable of doing that. And because of that reason, that's why I like this move so much.
And just quickly, I'd like to point out, I think to count to sort of piggyback off what David is saying, I think the solution is, because they will have times when they're small, if you can get a Zaire type, right? I prefer it be a veteran and not Zaire, but if you can get that guy, a guy who can come off the bench and guard a guy and match up and make it tough on them make it difficult to get some shots and be able to provide a little bit of offense, probably more consistently than Zaire. And that's really why I say I prefer a vet come play all the time in that role. But I think that'll sort of help offset some of the challenges, because then you can mix and match your lineups in a way that gives you the versatility to where if that becomes an issue, you can size up a little bit and arrange your matchups accordingly. Whereas before, you'd love to have a size in the starting lineup. It'd be great. But also, I think you got a little bit more defensive versatility the way it is too. So there's sort of some pros and cons on that.
Yeah, I just think you're asking a lot of him. You're asking him to size up. You're asking him to size down. You're asking him to be your quasi-backup point guard, even though I think he's going to be starting. I just don't think it completely covers what their biggest need is. I think they need to go out and add another wing. A lot of people just think Marcus Smart, that's it. That's all they needed. I still see the need for another wing. I don't like going into the season, if they don't make another move to add a wing, which – I don't think they are. I mean, if you listen to Zach Lyman's comments post-draft, I think they view Marcus Smart as being the replacement, and the rest of the minutes are going to go to those young guys. They want to see what they have in Zaire and Jake LaRavia. And I'm just not super comfortable being small, but also not having a vet wing on your roster with any size. Like, I'm not comfortable with that in that situation. And also, especially if you're not going to have a true backup point guard either. I just think it puts a lot of stress on the roster. And you're putting those eggs in Zaire's basket and Jake LaRavia's basket. And that was a mistake last year. And I got a feeling it's still going to be a mistake. Because it's not that those guys can't get better, but I just don't have a lot of belief in it. My biggest issue with Zaire and Jake LaRavia is the mental side of it. I just don't see the want to in them. I mean, if you go back to Jake LaRavia, Steve Forbes, his coach in college, said he had to get on him every day just to motivate him. They just don't seem like guys that wanted enough to improve their games to the level that they need to improve on. I just don't have a lot of confidence in them. And I think that they're going to go into this season kind of doing the same thing with those guys that they did last year. And when you're already in a situation to where I feel like you're smaller than I would like, that worries me. Like, it might not be a concern to some people. It might work out fine. Like I said, Marcus Smart, in a regular season, there are going to be times where it looks elite. Like, I don't feel like they'll have any problems in a regular season unless he gets in foul trouble consistently or he gets hurt. Then I think you really have a problem. But as long as he's in there and healthy, I think they'll be fine in the regular season. But when you get deep in the playoffs, get some team like the Lakers, for instance, when they're throwing Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura out there, who how are you going to match up when you're being that small? I just think there are some teams that are it's going to be a problem when they switch bigger guys onto them. Like I said, with Aaron Gordon and Jimmy Butler, I just think they're going to be matchups, and there's certain teams that are going to give you problems being that small. But as far as Marcus Smart in a vacuum, love him being on this team again and love everything he's bringing, but I just don't think it completely covers what they needed going into this offseason like some people do. Some people think it's everything's fine and the roster is set now. He completely covers everything you needed. You don't have any weaknesses, and I'm not going that far with
it. Well, I'd say I think they're still open now to refer to your comments that Kleiman made after the draft, essentially saying that they're not going to make any groundbreaking moves. And I think that much is true. I don't think you need to make a groundbreaking move to get a veteran version of Zaire Williams. Or I agree with you that I don't want Zaire or Jake LaRavia depending on in the playoffs. I don't think this is the same type of bet or the same level of bet. It's to some extent, I think they're allowing for room to grow for Zaire or LaRavia, but they got a roster spot open. So I think they're kind of hoping to find somebody.
I don't think it's going to be a wing, though. From what he was saying, I think he was saying that to kind of foreshadow that we're not adding a wing. We're in on Zaire Williams and Jake LaRavia. That's what it sounded like to me. I think they're going to add somebody, but I think it's a better chance that it's a big or a point guard or a combo guard. I got a feeling they're not bringing in another wing. I think they view Marcus Smart as being that guy to replace Dylan Brooks, and they feel okay with it. I don't think they want to bring anybody in that's going to take minutes away, because you got two, or really three, kind of three, four guys you're developing. And if you bring anybody in that's going to take up minutes, you're not going to be able to develop those guys, not on the floor. So I think they're all in on those guys. I'd be shocked if they brought in a vet ring. I hope I'm wrong, because that's what I would like to see happen. But I don't think that's what they're looking to do.
They can't be all in if they still got a roster spot open before a free agency, though.
Yeah,
I'm saying all in. I mean, all in on the wings. I'm saying that they're going to bring somebody in. I just think it's probably going to be a big or a point guard. I don't think it's going to be another wing.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a guard or a wing, man. I really do, because if you listen to what he said in the closing presser from the end of the season, he talked up Zaire, he talked up Kenneth Lofton Jr., and you look at this roster and where they're the deepest at right now. You got Steven Adams, Kenneth Lofton Jr., Santi Aldama, Jaren Jackson Jr., Xavier Tillman. Like that's your big rotation right there. Yeah, like
you small forward. You got, I guess, Marcus Smart, if you want to count him. You got Zaire Williams, you got Jake LaRavia, you got David Roddy. So I'm saying, those guys are all young in the big rotation. Most of those guys are vets or semi vets. They don't need as much development. With the wings, you got guys, you got three guys that you're trying to develop. And if you bring somebody else in, one of those guys is not playing at all. Like, you can't play four guys there. You already got Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. If you bring another vet in that's going to play at all, either one or two of those guys are not playing at all. So I'm just saying, man, I could be wrong, but from what he said post-draft, it sounded like to me that they're planning on playing those guys this year. Like, he keeps stopping up Jake LaRavia. He keeps bringing up Jake LaRavia, and I think they view Jake LaRavia as being that guy. That's my understanding.
He didn't bring him up a ton. He mentioned him, but I know for sure he mentioned him when he talked about Summer League, but he didn't bring up Zaire at all. And he did mention LaRavia, but it wasn't anything. Desmond Bane brought up LaRavia now in terms of a guy he thought would take a big leap.
I heard him, and he basically said that we're in on development. I thought he mentioned Zaire Williams. He didn't say mention Zaire Williams when he was talking about Summer League, but he mentioned the development of those guys. And he said Jake LaRavia, he said something to the effect that we're all in on Jake LaRavia or something to that effect. And he said that many times. They've been talking about Jake LaRavia ever since the end of the season, that you're going to be surprised by Jake LaRavia. I think they're all in on Jake LaRavia taking a step and kind of being a guy, maybe even a starter at some point. That's just that's the sense that I get. I'm not confident that happens, but that's what I feel, where I feel like they're at.
So let me ask you guys this question. Candace, I'll go to you first on this. Is next season, we know the suspension for Ja Morant's 25 games. To me, that doesn't really matter that much. You know, Ja missed games. He's missed games every season of his career. I think this roster is in a spot where they can win regular season games. And I've said it before. I don't care if they win just enough to get in the playoffs or if they're the number one seed. As long as they like making the playoffs is the most important thing. Look right. at what Miami done, right? Like you have to get there in order to win a championship, whether you're one or eight, that doesn't matter to me. So I think this roster is good enough to win regular season games. What are your expectations for next season? Like where is an area if they get to X, I'm okay with it. If they don't get to X, it's a failure. Where is that for you?
In terms of roster construction or in terms of like actual outcomes?
Outcomes for the team.
I think they really need to try to get to the Western Conference Finals. I really do. I think they need to prove to themselves that, you know, that they can make a deep playoff run. They keep coming up short. And a lot of that, you know, some of that last year had to do with injuries. But I think they need to prove, one, that they can stay healthy enough to make a deep playoff run. And two, that the influence of Marcus Smart and hopefully some additional vet that they bring in, if they can, has really helped the team grow. And you kind of want to see the core develop. You want to see them mature with some of the playoff experience that they have under their belt now. And we don't know. I mean, the West looks wide open now. Everybody thought the opposite at the beginning of the season. I mean, who knows really what happens in terms of how competitive the West is going to be. It doesn't look like the juggernaut, but I'm not going to make a difference one way or the other. But they need to start putting into action, putting in real linear movements. I mean, yeah, Kleiman used to say, you know, the success isn't always linear. But I think in this instant, if you don't at least get to the Western Conference Finals, you start to become a place where you're kind of looking for a major shakeup of some kind. Like, you don't want to be stagnant in terms of outcomes, continuing to be first and second round exits. You kind of put yourself more in a category of the Jazz or the Portland Trailblazers. So this is an important year for them to prove, no matter how the regular season goes, that that they can really make some noise, you know, be taken seriously, become a real contender in that regard.
So it's you feel like you want to see them in the Western Conference Finals. So anything less than the Western Conference Finals is a bust for you?
It's a disappointment. It's a major disappointment. And I think it's a major setback. It's not a bust because they are so young, you know. And I guess technically on paper they got the room to grow. But I have to be careful when I subscribe to that policy because I don't think you can take for granted youth either. I think, you know, things can happen in the NBA and windows can close quickly. It really doesn't always come down to just age. But because of that, I can't say bust, but it made disappointment and setback 100% in every way. And I think internally they'll feel the same way.
And for me, I've kind of recalibrated my thoughts on kind of where they are. If you go back to year before last, like I really felt like that team could have won a championship that year. If it wasn't for injuries in that Golden State Warriors series, I believe they would have been in the NBA Finals. I think they would have went on to beat Dallas, even though they had struggled with Dallas on that year. But I think they would have beat them in a playoff series. I think they would have played the Boston Celtics in the finals. But now over the last year with all the stuff that's going on with Ja, there's been a lot of maturity stuff. I mean, you talk about Dylan's no longer going to be on his roster. He was kind of a lot of people say the heart and soul of that locker room, even though a lot of people said he was a negative influence on the locker room by the end of the year. But I still think I knew how much those guys respected, and the vibes were just different last year than they were the year before. It just felt like everything was great the year before. And this year was just a roller coaster of the strain on the roster. And I'm going to be honest, I felt like, even personnel wise, I felt like they would be farther along than they are. Now, from all the reports, the front office went out and tried to make moves. They went out and tried to add a Mikal Bridges. They went out and tried to add an OG and Anobi. They went out and tried to make big moves, and maybe they just haven't been able to get any of the things done that they wanted to get done. But I still feel like even at this point, if they don't do anything else, which they're not really in a position anymore to do anything significant. I still feel like with the bench, they're still too far into development than I feel like they should be. That's where I, because again, I just think you're developing three guys, like at those three fours that we talk about, Zaire, Roddy, and LaRavia. That's a lot of that's a lot of development on your bench for a team that's trying to be a contender. So that just kind of changes my thoughts on what you should be looking at out of them. Because if you're still developing, I mean, they got a lot of development pieces on their bench, like a whole lot. And that's, I just don't think that many roster spots on a team that you're saying that should be going to the Western Conference Finals or think they should be in the finals to have on their roster. Like that bench is, I mean, this team is extremely top heavy. Like once you get past those three guys, I mean, you got Marcus Smart now, which is a piece, and obviously Steven Adams, if he could get back healthy, which we'll talk about later on. You have a lot of development off that bench, and I just still think that's – it doesn't scream we're all in and we're ready to compete at the highest level yet. It's still – these guys are young. It's going to be rooted in the development of the top three. That's just what this is going to be. I don't think they're ever going to get to the overall talent rise, roster-wise that I thought they would by this point. I think they're just going to lean on those three guys – get to their peak level, and if they win a championship, it's going to be rooted in that. It's not going to be that they're going to be able to kind of load the roster up and it's going to work that way. It's going to be all on those three guys. So it's kind of hard for me to put any expectations on them, because first off, I need to see how this job thing works out. Is he going to stay in line and get to where he needs to be? Because that's paramount for this team. If he can't get back to where he needs to be, then none of it is going to work. So I would say that they definitely need to get to the second round at least. I mean, nobody, I don't think anybody going into last season thought there was going to be a first round exit team. And they end up going in the first round. Definitely can't go out in the first round again. So I guess if I had to say today, just with all those things that I just laid out, I think they need to at least get to the second round.
Okay. So let's talk. Candace, you mentioned youth. Let's look at, and I'm going to stick with the Nuggets here. They won the championship this year, and the majority of what they done was internal development. They went out, they made some moves, they got some pieces that complemented Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic. They go out, they get Aaron Gordon, they make that move, and they add some veteran guys on the bench, KCP, Bruce Brown, and Michael Porter Jr. wasn't like, so their core was Murray, Jokic, Michael Porter Jr. They added pieces around them.
Yep.
Murray and Jokic are in year 7 and 8. And we're sitting here year 4 and 5 for Ja and Jaren. And I, you know, you mentioned you can't take that for granted, right? You never know, you know. Right now, we're in a completely unknown state of what version of Ja Morant are we going to be. I mentioned the Matthew Dellavedova thing earlier, knowing that Isaac's argument would be, well, they had LeBron James. Early trajectory for Ja Morant is a guy that can take over a game. Is he going to go down in history having as much impact on the game as what LeBron James has had? I would say the answer to that question is no, but I think that he can impact the game in ways. I've seen him impact the game in ways that dominant players do. Guys like LeBron, like Giannis, you know, you just go down the list. Ja Morant has that capability. The question is, are we ever going to see him get to that point? It really looked like he was getting there. You saw he hit the game winner against Golden State, getting downhill, makes a left-hand layup. Like, there are a lot of things where there have been a lot of times where we've watched him take over games. And this year, the mental side of it kept him from doing that. Candace throughout the year mentioned a number of times that fourth quarter Ja just does not look like him. So that matters. I have a lot of faith in Ja because of what we've seen from him early on. I think that he can get back to that. He just has to have the right people around him. And everything that we've heard from Kleiman and this franchise has indicated they're doing everything they can to support him and put him in a situation where he can be successful. Now, we don't know, and we may never know where his headspace is, but he's definitely got to get right in order for them to take that next step. Are you guys at the point where, you know, you're 7-8 for Murray and Jokic and 4-5 for John and Jaren? And I know a lot of people get impatient because it's like, okay, this team should be here and this is where they're at right now. If we are sitting here 2 years down the road talking about a Grizzlies championship, I don't think we're going to be disappointed. At any point, if there's a championship, I don't think we're disappointed. But obviously, we haven't seen that happen yet. I just feel like as fans and even as analysts, like, we get in a hurry. We see teams win, and we don't really break it down to the bones of what it was. You know, you go back to the Bucks and what they went through. They make it to the playoffs, they get eliminated. They make it to the playoffs, they get eliminated. They go a little bit deeper, they get eliminated. Okay, we're short a piece. Let's go and get Jrue Holiday. That's what we need. They make that move, and it puts them over the top. The Nuggets, it was injuries, right? They were one of the best teams in the West. Jamal Murray gets hurt. Stuff like that happens. And then this year they load it up. They go out, they're like, okay, we've got our core. We're happy with these guys. We know that we need wing defenders. So they go out, they go and get Bruce Brown. They go and get KCP, a guy that's going to play defense, rebound, a guy that's going to play defense and knock down threes. And those are the pieces that put them over the top. So to me, what the Grizzlies are doing with the development right now in Z and Laravia and Roddy, they're trying to see if they can get those pieces being young guys while the core is still young. Because, like, is it better for the franchise to go out and get these pieces from somewhere or develop these pieces internally?
Yeah, for sure, internal development. And I think you need a mix of both. I mean, because the Denver Nuggets, they had Christian Braun. That popped for them, right? I mean, yeah. Rookie, and he came in immediately and popped for the team. But the Nuggets also really ran a small – they weren't a deep team. Like, everybody's talking all year. I think that narrative gets lost. Everybody's talking all year about the concern of the depth of the Nuggets. And basically, essentially, what they did was run a smaller rotation, and that's ultimately how it ended up getting them over the top. So – I think that gets a little lost when we're talking about how they built their contender.
Man, that's why I don't think you can put any expectations on it. Like, I don't even think you should say Western Conference Finals, because I think what I've learned over the last year is they're just not ready for it, whether it's maturity or personnel-wise or mentality of the franchise and what they're trying to get accomplished. They're just not ready. And I mean, to be honest, you don't really see teams win championships at the young age that their core is. That's just not something that you see happening. And I think 2 years ago, I think they were so far ahead of schedule that I think it made it appear that they were ready to do it. And I think they could have done it if they went all in and added a couple of vets here and there, kind of took a different mentality, but they decided to kind of, even though the team was overachieving, they didn't really operate as a franchise like they were overachieving. They still were in on trying to develop guys. And I think now it's just kind of in a weird spot to where you kind of feel like they should be here, but they really aren't. And I think that's the realization that I've come to. Like, I had aspirations, okay, man, we could win a championship now. And just last season put a lot of things in perspective. It's just for us, the real age of this team. It didn't really show 2 years ago. I think it really showed this year. Just the maturity angle of it, just a lot of different things going on. It just showed that they weren't really ready to do that. So it's hard for me to put any expectation on. I say second round just because, I mean, if you're going to be still find a way, even though despite all of this, they were still the 2 seed. So if you're going to be a top half seed, I mean, you're supposed to win your first round matchup. You go in 2-7, you're not supposed to lose that matchup. So that's why I'm going to say second round. But right now, I'm just kind of in wait and see mode. I'm in wait and see mode with Ja to see how he comes back and can he get back to where we need to be and get back to that four quarter Ja that took that takes over. Because even though he played well at times last year, just wasn't the same with him. He put up big numbers. We saw him in that Lakers game, what he did in that game, but we didn't see that as much as we had in the past. It just seems like there was a mental block there, and I guess maybe all the talk, all the stuff going on off the court, people memeing him for saying he was fine in the West. I think that stuff kind of weighed on him, and I think you had a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that we didn't even know about before this stuff even came up. Because, I mean, you talk about Steven Adams and the meeting. I think this stuff had been boiling over under the surface before it even became public. I think the team had been dealing with a lot of this, and I think that a lot of this stuff was going on and kind of hurt them the way it didn't in last. Because we saw this team, when guys went out injured, they was just still kept rolling. There were just certain things that didn't click the same way it did last year, and I think a lot of that had to do with off-the-court stuff. So I'm just in wait-and-see mode right now, because I think, first off, you got to find out what's going to happen with Ja. I think that's paramount before we talk about anything else. So it's kind of hard for me to say right now, man. It's just wait-and-see mode. But I don't think, really, honestly, you can put any expectations on it right now.
I know you guys, you know, we talk about the that I want to clarify, because I think that they should get to the Western Conference Finals. I don't necessarily think I should think they should win it. Like, I'm not saying they should go to the finals. I'm not saying they should win a championship. I know you guys, like you're saying, you know, it takes a while to win a championship. I get that. But I don't think going to the Western Conference Finals is the same thing as winning a championship. I think they're very different things. It's a step in the right direction, but that's about all it is. And I also know that things can change in a year, right? We went from a year where it was the complete opposite from one year to the next. It really was. And every year is a different team. So while I don't expect them to go back to having the same, I think college vibe almost, because that was, I think to some extent, that was a part of the immaturity and it led to some other issues. I do think that you'll see more improvement, I think, from a lot of areas, just from the mindset of the players being intentional about making that move. And I think the influence of Marcus Smart is going to make a difference. I think even for the guys who we are talking about developing, even them just having at least, I mean, a year of experience under their belt. I'm not saying we should be depending on those guys in the playoffs. That's the opposite of what I'm saying. But I guess I'm saying, just because I think the expectation is Western Conference Finals, or should be, like, I think that's a reasonable expectation for them, doesn't mean that I think they should be winning a championship either. The two aren't the same.
Man, I understand why you would say that, because me, of all people, I've always been in on this team, is ready to compete now. I feel like they should win a championship. So I understand why you would say that. I mean, from what the body of work that they've had, we know how last year went, but going back 2 years ago, you just kind of look at what they were able to accomplish. You feel like that should be an expectation. It's just, after seeing the stuff that went down last year in the job stuff, it's just kind of hard for me to say anything right now about expectations. I'm just more concerned about, can they get back to the right space as a team? Like, and I don't know the answer to that question right now, because it all depends on job. Like, I get, like, so I understand exactly why you would say that they should get to the Western Conference Finals, because in a vacuum, I feel the same way. Like, I feel like this team, man, since 2 years in a row, this team is legit. They should be able to get there, but I it's just wait and see right now for me. But I definitely get what you're saying.
I also think, and maybe more than you guys, I think that it's possible that even if Ja isn't, you know, doesn't get 100% back to the guy we saw before, I think we've seen Jaren and be a guy that we question, is he the most important player on the team? And so I factor in the Jaren thing and his growth, even no matter what, I mean, not no matter what happens with Ja, you need a good, healthy, competitive Ja. But I guess I don't feel that it all rides on his shoulders, because we've seen that, especially when the team is intentional about going through him, that he can be that guy too.
Definitely agree there.
I think that, like, speaking on those two guys specifically, I think that Jaren is more of a floor raiser, right? Like he, when he's out there and he's healthy, when he's on the floor, this team is going to be competitive because of what he's capable of doing. And that's, like, it's not a, It's really tough to say that because it's not a knock on Ja. Jaren's impact is more than just one thing. Ja is an absolutely extraordinary offensive player. He's become a serviceable defender, but Ja Morant is not going to win you games on the defensive end of the floor. Jaren Jackson Jr. can win you games on both ends of the floor. And that's not something, I don't know that we'll ever be able to say that about Ja Morant at any point in his career. And so that is, you know, when I said earlier, I think that this team is still good enough to win regular season games. A lot of that is resting upon the fact that I have extreme confidence in what Jaren Jackson is able to do. And in that stretch that we saw when Ja Morant was out, like, it was no mistake that he was an all-star last year. He really, the leap that we've been waiting for him to take, that it was there last year. That I don't think that we've seen the final version of Jaren Jackson Jr. yet, but he definitely took a step in the right direction last season.
Man, if Jaren gets to his ceiling, man, we're talking about something completely different. And I've said this, I've been on this train going back to the middle of last season. I think this team's championship aspirations, as the roster stands now, unless something crazy happens, they go out and add somebody else, or even G.G. Jackson turns into a superstar or something like that. I think this team's ceiling is based. It's based in their championship aspirations are based in Jaren. If Jaren reaches his ceiling, this team can win a championship. He can carry this team because of the two-way ability that he has. We know what Ja can do in the offensive end is. And as David just said, I don't think Ja's ever going to be a guy that's going to win you games on a defensive end. I think it's Jaren. Leap to take that even more of a leap than we saw last year that could really raise the ceiling of this team. We talk about the development of those three guys. I think of the three, I think Jaren is the most important. And it's hard to say that because people get on you and say, oh, well, we know Ja's the MVP. Ja's the best player on this team, blah, blah, blah. And that might be true, but it's going to take Jaren to get where he needs to get, I think, in this current iteration of this roster for them to be able to win a championship. It's just beginning to this rooted in his ability to play on both ends, the impact that he has on the defensive end. I think consistency on the offensive end is the leap that he needs to take. I mean, there are times where we saw him where they're playing through him and when Ja was out, and that's the thing. Can they ever get this going, get them both going together? That's something that we haven't seen a lot of during their tenure. And if they can ever unlock that and Jaren shows their consistency on the offensive end, I think no matter what else is on the roster. We talk about David Taylor said, I would say they had LeBron James on the roster. If they could ever get that, I think that would be that same kind of dynamic and they could win a championship. I don't care who else is on the roster. Those two guys alone, I think, could carry this team there.
Dennis, you got anything else on that subject?
Yeah, no, I'm good on that.
Okay. So Isaac just mentioned, and we typically talk about the draft quite a bit on the show, and that got kind of throttled down this year just because of life happening. But really, I'm not going to talk about the second pick that they made because until he comes over, when he comes over,
I don't think he's ever going to come over. But
yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Would you say they straight up?
They won. Wang Zealand, man.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they want to keep that last roster spot and that last two way spot open. So I think they just had to pick, and they were like, "Man, we gotta pick somebody here. We're not trading it, so we'll just stash a guy because he's like 22 years old. Like you don't stash 22 year old rookies. Like so, I would be shocked if he ever came over. But I think that was just a waste pick. They just threw that one away. But anyways,
so let's talk. Isaac and I, oddly enough, we cover G.G. Jackson in our draft coverage. Isaac mentioned, you know, if he turns into a superstar, he's 18 years old. There's a lot of time for him to grow. He's got an excellent offensive package, like isolation scoring. This kid can do that already at 18 years old. But my biggest concern with him is he ever going to be anything other than a traffic cone on defense? Because when you're talking about basketball IQ on the defensive end of the floor, his is going to be negative. He makes a lot of mistakes on the defensive end of the floor. Now he does have length, 6'9" plus wingspan. And so some of the things that we, you know, some of the concerns that Isaac has, some of the concerns that the fan base in general has, G.G. Jackson is a guy that kind of covers that. He gives you size and length, but this is one of those cases where size and length doesn't matter because he doesn't apply himself on the defensive end of the floor. I will say I like this pick because of that core of threes that they have. Z, Laravia, Roddy. Competition is good. Internal competition is even better. And I think Gigi Jackson, even at 18 years old, is going to be good enough that he's going to push those other guys, that if they're not foot on the throttle, he's going to jump over some of them just because of his ability to get buckets. And the half court offense makes a huge difference whenever it comes to playoff time.
Yeah, man. And one thing I do want to say, and I want to give Zach Lyman and his front office, I want to commend them for it, is they went out and brought in two different type of guys, like guys that they wouldn't usually bring in. I've talked about that a lot, that this front office is kind of saved. They bring in kind of these saved guys, Marcus Smart or G.G. Jackson. Neither one of those guys fit their normal M.O. I mean, these guys have swagger. You're talking about guys that are not super efficient at all times, that might kind of buck the trend a little bit. And they went out and brought in two guys. So I commend them for that, because at times you need guys like that. But G.G. Jackson, man, I love this pick to get a guy with his upside at 46, because he's a guy that I think would have been in contention for 25. Like, he's a guy that a lot of draft boards had going in the bottom of the first round. And to get him here, I think is excellent. I mean, you talk about size, man, bring great size, 6'9", 6'11", wingspan, just advanced footwork, really good handle, advanced footwork for his size and age. And you talk about his ISO scoring ability, man. He doesn't have a bag. He has a suitcase. I mean, you watch him on film, man. And shout out to my guy, Sean Coleman. He made a joke at the Spaces the other day on our podcast, that I said he was going to be KD. I did say that, I'm preface this again, man, so don't nobody take this the wrong way, that I'm not saying he's going to be KD, but if you watch some of these moves, like the turnaround fadeaway, he has a super high release on his jump shot. And the thing about him, he could grow some more, because one thing, he was supposed to be a high school senior. He reclassified and went to South Carolina, so he won't even be 19 until December. To the middle of December, the week before Christmas, until he turns 19. So I think he was the youngest prospect in the draft. I think he got some bad advice. He walked into a terrible situation at South Carolina. I mean, that team was bad. The vibes were bad on that team. They had all kind of stuff going on. And he had to walk in at that young age and be a leader on that team. He was like all they had. And there were some situations, I think, and this might have been some of the reasons why he slipped. There was a situation where I think they had a close game. And he was pissed off, and after the game went on a tirade on social media saying that they should have got him the basketball, or he could have won the game, and some stuff like that. And he kind of apologized for that and said that wasn't really him after the draft. But I think that's kind of stuff like that. I think he had some bad workouts. I heard that he didn't even have like a real workout coach, that he kind of went to the workouts with a high school coach. It's like real old school type of situation. So I think some of those are some of the reasons why he slipped. And David talked about him on the defensive end. And you also, I think another negative of him would be some of the efficiency numbers. But I think a lot of that.
Yeah, I don't hold that against him, man, just because like they didn't have another option, like you said. So yeah. That is the efficiency thing. If you want to be concerned about that, but nah, like that wasn't it for me. Didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Cause I mean, you talking about a guy 17 years old, probably when he first walked into this, if you're 17, 18 years old, walking into this team and being a leader in a bad situation like that, he's all they had. So there was a lot of times, if you watch film where you see him take shots, have to take shots at the end of the shot clock and force some shots up. And I think on the defensive end, and I'm not going to totally absolve it and blame it on this, but I think there were times where he was just kind of conserving energy. He was working so hard on the offensive end, because you see it. That's one thing that he does. I mean, he can handle it, man. He gets to his spots. I mean, he's moving out ball. He cuts. Like, on the offensive end, man, he has, and I hate to say this and put this on a guy, but ISO scoring-wise, I think he could be elite. Like, I think he could get shots now, get to his spots, even on the NBA level. The defensive end is where the question marks are going to come in. But some of that definitely had to do with him. I think just a bad system, him being a guy that was super high usage, that had to work hard on the offensive end. I think at times he was just taking plays off, because you'd see he just completely give up. Don't even try to get around screens. He just kind of stand there, let his man go right by him and get to the basket. And he just didn't put in a lot of effort. The defensive engagement wasn't there at all. So you just hope that's something that you can coach out of him. But as David mentioned, I think guys like Zaire Williams and Tennis should have went up. Jake LaRavia, because he's the guy. He's not going to come in being timid. Like, those guys are kind of timid, kind of laid back personality. That's not Gigi at all. He's going to come in there and thinking, man, I'm going to take somebody's lunch money when I come in there. That's the type of guy that he's going to be. So he's going to be aggressive. I think they got a steal here, because you usually don't get guys with this type of upside at 46.
Yeah, I like the pick. I want to make that completely clear. I've poked fun about the defensive stuff on Twitter, and this is when we were reviewing him and when I was watching film on him, I honestly had no idea how old he was. I'm just watching the film and I'm watching, and I'm a stickler for effort on the defensive end. And these guys, if you have the talent to make it to the NBA, if you put effort in on the defensive end, you can be a serviceable defender. That's like Trey Young.
And he has a
serviceable defender.
Length, for sure.
Yeah. And that's like guys that are smaller than him that are bad on the defensive end, they put in effort, they can be serviceable. You look, Luka didn't hardly play defense. Jason Kidd comes around, Luka starts buying in on the defensive end of the floor, and the Dallas Mavericks defense last year at one point was the best defense in the league. That changed as the course of the season went along. But you get guys, when they buy in defensively, they can still make an impact, even though that's not their strong suit. But going back to what you mentioned about, you know, him going on social media, that's this generation, man. That's like, you know, Isaac and I are a little bit older. I don't know exactly how old Isaac is, but I think that we're probably pretty close in age. Like, there was no social media. Like, when I was playing high school basketball, you didn't have to deal with this stuff.
No, it's a completely different world.
These guys now, they're getting this. Social media has been around since they've been in, you know, sixth grade. Like, while in the grand scheme of things, yeah, you shouldn't go on social media and be like, oh, they should have got me the ball and stuff like that. But I like the fact that he wants the ball in his hand. Yeah. I like the fact that he's passionate and he hates to lose, because I like winning, but I hate losing way more than I like winning. Like, that is the way I've been wired like that. Dude, I would... There are a ton of things that I would rather do than lose, like, period. I hate it. I hate losing a lot more than I like winning. And I know that's kind of weird to say, but that whenever I'm playing something competitive, that's what drives me. I want to win at all costs, because my disdain for losing is so high. And I think that, like, what we've seen from Gigi so far, like, throughout his college career, and the emotions and the stuff that he kind of let flare out of him, was that desire to want to win. And whether that was, you know, he has a disdain for losing, or he really just wanted to win, whatever it is, I like that competitive drive. And I think that's going to bring a different level to this year's camp for the Grizzlies. These wings, this is the NBA. Nothing's going to be handed to you. You got the talent. They spent the draft pick on you. Yeah, that's great. But if this kid comes in and he's lighting it up, there's no reason that he shouldn't leave these guys. LaRavia, Roddy, Zaire, none of those three guys have done anything at the NBA level that's like, oh, they're untouchable, this kid can't leave them. And I would be completely fine if that happened, honestly.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about it. But if you're a draft guy, I know you're familiar with anybody out there that loves the draft. You're familiar with Rafael Barlow from NBA Big Board and Draft Junkies. He gave him man, he said that if he had went back to South Carolina, he felt like that Gigi Jackson would be the number one pick next year. So he's very high on him, and he's a guy that I respect. So I was floored when he said that. I know the next couple drafts are not expected to be good, but that's what Rafael Barlow said, man. He said he felt like he would be the number one pick next year. So that's the type of upside you're getting with this kid. And I'm excited for him, as you said, because I believe he has the type of personality where he's going to push those guys. If there's anything,
they need that,
Yeah, and if there's anything in Zion, because I've talked about that a lot over the last week. If you follow me on Twitter, that's my biggest issue with Zion Arabia that scares me is personality wise. I don't know if they have that dog in them to put in that kind of work to get to where they need to get. But if there is anything in there, I think him and his presence being there is going to push it out of him. So I'm excited for July 3rd, man, to get the summer league kicked off. I'm excited for Gigi Jackson to be out there. And I think it's a good pick. I mean, he's a guy that you're probably going to stick down off of Church Road down there with the Memphis Hustle and the Landers Center to spend some time down there. But he has some high upside, man. If he's willing to come in, work like he said he is, he seems to be saying all the right things. If he's willing to come in and put in that work, man, I think he has the potential of being a real player down the line, about 2 or 3 years down the line for this team. And talk about that big wing, man, length, size. He's definitely that guy, 6'9", 6'11", 7 foot wingspan. He has all the tools to get better on the defensive end, all the measurables that's there. He just has to put in that effort. And I think sometime in South Carolina, we just didn't see it, but I think it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, we've been, Isaac and I have been chatting quite a bit here. We're not just talking over Candace. She was having some technical difficulties. Oh, she was back. She was back, and then we just lost her again. She did send this message, and I was not aware of this throughout the time scouting him and reading. Gigi Jackson won the Peach Jam Defensive Player of the Tournament in 2022. Yeah. So he does apparently have some defensive chops that we did not see in the video from his games at South Carolina. And she makes another good point in the message that she sent. She's like, not everybody on the team can be a plus defender. And that's a great point. That's something, you know, you're going to have guys that just need to go out and get buckets. And
man, just shout out to my guy, Junior. People hating on about the defense. I'm like, there's a lot of guys in the NBA that don't play defense, man. Kelly Oubre is a guy out there. He's getting shots up. Everybody's not going to be a defender. Some guys are just out there to get buckets, man. And it is what it is, man.
Yeah, and you got guys on teams. Let's be honest. Michael Porter Jr. was not out there for his defensive prowess.
No, right? Not at all.
You want that man out there taking shots, getting points for you. And that's what you have to have. So, you know, we've covered quite a bit on the show today. It's been good to get everybody back together. One thing that we talked about, we kind of teased it in the draft coverage. We were talking about report cards from last year. So our next couple of shows, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go back and break down the roster from last year. We're going to hand out grades for everybody. And Candace will hopefully be back, not storming and losing power for that one. We were definitely glad to have her back on the show today, but she's not going to close it with us. Isaac, do you got anything that you want to go over before we get out of here, man?
Man, I was going to say, man, my lights are going on and off right now as well. So I understand what she's dealing with, man, trying to hang on here before we end this. But I did want to mention quickly, there's some other things that we'll get to in a future podcast. Not going to have time to do it today. But I did want to mention Zaire Williams. And when Zach Lyman talked at the end of the post-draft press conference, he kind of mentioned the guys that were going to be playing summer league. And there was a big omission, and there was Zaire Williams. This did not mention Zaire Williams' name, which is kind of surprising to not hear him mention him. It's weird. The only way that I see that he wouldn't be playing summer league is if there's some kind of injury or they're trying to move him. I know it's his third year. I know it's not normal that a third-year player plays summer league. We saw Xavier Tillman do it last year, but he actually asked to do it. But after the season that Zaire Williams had, seeing that he was a top 10 pick and what they had invested in him, I don't think he's shown enough to kind of graduate from that. I think of all the players that they have, he's probably the most important guy that they should probably have in summer league. So I don't know if he forgot. I think that's unlikely, because I think he would be at the forefront of his mind when he's talking about the young guy. So I don't think he just forgot to mention him. But I wouldn't be surprised if maybe you hear about an injury or something that he's dealing with, because he was dealing with little nagging stuff all throughout the year. So maybe it's that, or if it's not that, the only other thing I could see is that maybe they're thinking about moving him. So what are your thoughts on him not playing summer league? Because I think he should definitely be there. It's kind of disappointing that he's not.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he should 100% be there. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as what you're laying it out. I don't, man, there are a lot of moving parts whenever it comes to decisions on who's going to be there and who's not going to be there. I think that he could definitely benefit from it. Him going down there and playing with the ball in his hand, I think would be super important. Like, let him be the point guard for the summer league, because you look at, you know, Aldama, we heard about, oh, he's going to make this leap. And then summer league, everybody was ready to ship him off for a bag of potato chips. And then he came out and played fantastic last year. So maybe they're looking at that. They're like, okay, Aldama didn't really look all that great in summer league, but then he done well in the regular season. So maybe that's the lens that they're looking at it through. Like, you know, we're just going to make him come to camp and, you know, put in, have him doing all of his workouts and everything here rather than playing with the, you know, with the summer league team. But it's when you take a guy that high and he hasn't produced at this point in his career, I think you need to get him as many in-game reps as you can. And that's why I think that he should be there. And I'll actually, even though, you know, Kleiman didn't mention him, I'll be a little bit shocked if he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing for me. I mean, he was a 10th pick in the draft, man. You with what he's shown, he needs every developmental opportunity that he has. Was it, and especially when you talk about on-court, because you can't replicate that. I know guys play pickup in the summertime and stuff like that, but it's not the same thing as playing in the even the level controlled environment of summer league with referees. You're not going to get that. So, I mean, it's only, I had some people, there are some people that say, oh, well, they don't want to hurt his feelings or hurt his confidence to ask him to play. I don't buy that at all. Cause I mean, and he doesn't strike me of a guy that they would have asked to do it and turn it, he would have turned it down. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. But if that hurts your confidence that much, like, you're not built for this anyway, man. This is the NBA, exactly, man. You can't be babying guys, man. I mean, if your team needs you to play summer league and you know you struggle and you're a 10 pick, man, you need to get out there and play. So I don't think it's that easy, but we'll see. But that was kind of shocking to me, man. That was one of the things that kind of stood out. There's some other things that I want to touch on, but man, we'll do that in the next podcast.
Yeah, for sure. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Hate that we lost Candace. I know she had some great points to make to help close it out, but she'll be back with us next time. Again, we're gonna be handing out report cards for the roster from last season on the next few episodes. If you're looking to find us on social media, we are at Ethos Grizzlies on Twitter. I'm at NBA DWill21. Candace is at Candace H901. Isaac is going to let you know where you can find him and get us out of here.
Yeah, man. Just excited to be back, man. Like you said, sometimes life happens. We weren't able to kind of do our draft coverage like we used to. Hopefully next offseason when we get in our draft coverage, we'll be able to do numbers like we did in the years before. So, excited to be back. Excited to have the whole crew. Sorry we lost Candace. My lights have actually gone out, and somehow I'm persevering through, man. I don't know how my internet and Wi-Fi hadn't gone out, but still on here, man. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. We'll definitely be back. A lot to talk about. Summer league coming up. We'll definitely be covered that. We got some stuff to do about that. So make sure you keep it locked and keep those Grizzlies over there. Give like and follow. Definitely appreciate that. Until next time, we're gone.
Those presentations.